Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, also known as NASCA. My name is Tammy Schaffstall. I'm calling in from Lighthouse Point, Florida, and I'll be your host tonight. If you'd like to participate on the show, the telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're self-supporting through our own contributions. If you'd like to donate to NASCA, we would really appreciate your donations, and it is tax deductible. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tonight's show is an open mic show. Our special guest is Barbara Joy Hansen. Barbara Joy Hansen is from Milford, Massachusetts. She's a child abuse survivor and a violence prevention expert. Her book, Listen to the Cry of the Child, is where she shares her journey. She and her husband work in prisons, homeless shelters, domestic conferences, and she facilitates a survivor support group called Beauty Out of Ashes. Barbara Joy has been on the show many times with us. It's always a pleasure to have her, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting show. We do need some support. We do know a lot of people do stream in. Some people aren't ready to join the show and just want to listen, and that's okay. But if you'd like to join the show, we'd love to have you. It's very friendly, very easy to do. If you can talk on a party line with a couple of friends, a conference call, you know, you can certainly participate in this show. The number again is 646-595-2118. And I'm going to go ahead and open the mics. I've got a call here from area code 318. Area code 318, who do we have the pleasure of speaking with, and what area are you calling from?
This is the Alabama Ambassador Volunteer for NASCA, Pamela Lockridge. And I'm calling from Louisiana, central Louisiana.
Hold on, let me take. I used to live in Shreveport, so I know Louisiana very well.
Oh, I grew up Thank in Bossier.
Bossier, yeah, okay. Yeah, well, I was in Bossier Parish, actually. So that's a pretty interesting area. I worked for the Hilton there at that time. It was pretty interesting. So thank you for joining us, Pamela. I really appreciate it. And I believe this next call. Oh, absolutely. I believe this next caller may be Barbara Joy, or we call her Bobby, as Bobby Joy as well. Barbara Joy, is this you calling from area code 508?
Yes, it's me. I'm here. I'm ready.
Hi,
very
Barbara
happy
Joy,
to be here.
Thank you for calling us. Well,
thank
we're happy
you.
To have you as well. Well, at this point, again, if anyone's listening and like to call in, please do so. We may get some other callers. So as we start the conversation, you know, if people do call in, I don't want to lose them. I don't want them to sit too long. So I may interrupt where we are, pop in and introduce them, and then go back to whomever was speaking. So we have Tammy. I'm calling in from, which is me. I'm calling in from Florida. We have Pamela calling in from Louisiana, and then we have Barbara Joy or Bobby Joy calling in from Massachusetts. So we'll go ahead and get started with the show, and hopefully other people will join us. What I'd like to do is turn the mic over to Barbara Joy so she can address the audience, those who are streaming in, and maybe set the tone for the discussion and get us going. Barbara Joy?
Okay, thank you. Last month in November, we talked about What Have You Learned About Suffering, and that was an excellent show. We had probably about eight or nine people that called in. So I'm hoping that people join in tonight for the discussion that we're going to talk about. What have you learned about waiting? What has it been for you as you think back about your life? Maybe before recovery, or maybe you're still waiting for things now. So what has it been for you in particular circumstances or your home life or your recovery or your walk? What have you learned personally about waiting? I'd like to open it up with that question. If you can maybe think about some answers, and if not, I'll start. So
why don't you go ahead and get us started?
Okay. Well, for me, I didn't even know I was waiting for anything. You know, I grew up in a godly pastor's home, loving family, mom and dad that loved each other and loved my brother and me. And they didn't know about the incest, childhood incest with my grandfather. They didn't know about the clergy sex abuse at a youth camp. They thought the camp was a safe place, so we wandered the campground freely. And they, you know, they didn't know about the trauma that happened in my marriage with sexual addictions on the part of my husband's sexual addictions resulting from his dad's suicide, comforting himself with women. So I didn't know I was waiting for anything because I was in such denial. I was, you know, traumatized. And the more trauma you go through, the deeper it goes. So for me, I literally thought I had a pretty happy childhood. Had a best friend that was a pastor's kid that lived down the street from me, and we, you know, had neighborhood game nights and puppet shows and plays in our garage where we put the curtain up and sold popcorn, and it probably was great that I didn't have those memories when I was young until many, many years later. When I guess, you know, the silence set in. 38 years of silence is really a long time to address childhood sexual abuse and come out with it. So for me, I was a really shy, quiet, very trusting, withdrawn, extremely vulnerable little child. And looking at pictures of me, there's only one or two that I have at the age of maybe two or three or four that I'm smiling. Most of them I'm not smiling. So I see a lot of hidden pain in my face and a voice that couldn't speak about what happened to me. So I just, you know, I was like a deaf mute, and I became silent about it for decades. I wanted to tell. I wanted desperately. I did tell my best friend who was down the street whose brother violated her as well. And but I was unable to. So I thought I had a normal childhood. So for me, I was really, I guess I was waiting to be rescued. I was waiting for somebody to tell me. I was waiting for the fear, the denial, depression, and anxiety that brought silence. And, of course, you're told not to tell by the perpetrators. And usually you have more than one. And then when you do so, when you do finally get courage to tell somebody, you're shut down and you're criticized. So waiting for me was extremely painful. And it came out physically for me. I was unable to start my puberty, and I didn't know it had anything to do with the sexual trauma. But repeated trauma leads to physical problems. And for me, it was really, really difficult and destructive to my emotional well-being and also to my physical well-being. My best friend was developed. I was not. I was flat as a board, stuffed my bras with Kleenex, and I didn't understand it was related to the trauma that I had experienced as a child. And, you know, I just really became like a deaf mute. I had ears and a mouth, but I couldn't speak the unthinkable, and tried to scream, but no sound came out of my mouth. So my mother even told me as I was writing my book that I had nightmares. She said, "You screamed and screamed in the night, and I came and I held you and I comforted you." But I was in such a traumatized deep sleep. I'm glad that she told me that while I was writing my book, because until she told me that, I kind of even forgot that. But she said I looked so scared and it frightened her terribly. She didn't know, and I couldn't tell her. And she'd pat me and hold me close. And I remember her coming in the night, shooing monsters out from underneath my bed. And then I didn't like the way I looked. There's a picture of me in my book at the age of the clergy sex abuse. I was 11, and then he came back the next summer at the camp, and I was 12. And then he was sent to the other churches and other campgrounds and ended up in the Bahamas, where he continued to do youth ministry and molest. And so I didn't know it was related to, you know, my silence. I didn't know it was related to my waiting to come out from things that I had, you know, shut down and shoved and didn't deal with. So I really became very backward, and I didn't feel normal. I felt very inadequate. And it was a really long journey out as I began my recovery in my 40s. When I started with the painful memories. And for me, you know, there was a lot of waiting. There was a lot of waiting. There was waiting for me to, when my husband and I got married, I couldn't get pregnant. I had no idea it was related to not only the incest, the clergy sex abuse, but his sexual addictions. Infertility brought extreme pain. For me, I'd go in the baby stores, department stores. My friends were getting pregnant. My daddy's old biddies in his church, a couple of them were saying, "Well, how come you're not pregnant?" Well, I didn't know I wasn't getting pregnant. So I was waiting to get pregnant. I was desperately wanting a child, and I couldn't conceive. So those are some of the things that I, you know, was waiting for. I waited to tell my mother. I was so traumatized. I wanted to tell her. I started to tell her one time, and she walked out of the room, and I didn't even get the words out. And she was a victim of her father, my grandfather as well, so that could have been why she walked out of the room. But there was a very emptiness and a void in my soul and in my marriage.
Right.
We were together in the same home, but we weren't happy. When that happened in our marriage, you know, I was void. Those are some of the things that I was waiting for.
Okay, what you were waiting for, to be rescued and to be heard.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you right there because we do have another caller, and I don't want to leave her holding too long. Her name is Cherie. She's calling in from Tennessee. Good evening, Cherie. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thank you for joining the NASCA show. We have Pamela calling in from Louisiana. We've got Barbara Joy, our guest speaker, who's calling in from Massachusetts. And, of course, I'm Tammy calling in, the host, calling in from Florida. So we've got enough people to have a really good show. Barbara Joy, our guest speaker, she wanted to present to the group, and she gave us a great share on what are we waiting for. And I understood Barbara Joy to say that she's waiting to be rescued. She's waiting to be heard. She's waiting for, the healing of her physical body. That's what I heard. Is that right, Barbara Joy?
Yeah, and it has happened, but it's what have you learned about waiting? Not what you're waiting for now, but maybe you are still waiting. I heard from a friend of mine on Facebook today. She went to court, and she's waiting. She has to wait till Tuesday, and she was questioning, why do I have to wait? And I thought, wow, I wish you could call in tonight because that's exactly what my subject is. And she said she couldn't because of her two kids. But I'm so glad that Cherie has called in because I know she has something to say about waiting too.
Okay.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Cherie. We'll go to Cherie, and then we'll go over to Pamela, if you guys don't mind. So, Cherie, take it away.
Well, first of all, I want to say I was listening to Barbara's story, and it absolutely breaks my heart. And, I can only imagine, the waiting that she had to do to be able to open up about what happened to her and, just having to keep that inside for so long. I can't even imagine. I mean, it's like being abused all over again.
It's a double sickness. It produces guilt and shame and anxiety and sadness and fear and anger and inability to trust. And it creates isolation and withdrawal and depression and insomnia, memory blocks. I walked in my sleep, panic attacks.
Right.
So, we've probably all gone through a various things like what I've gone through. Some people go through bedwetting and nail biting and sleepwalking like I did. But, it's a mental and an emotional death when you feel all alone, you're empty, and, you're waiting to be rescued. And, and you can't tell anybody what you're going through.
Right. And then, the inability to get pregnant, it's just that's just one more thing piled on top of it. And it was like it's almost like I would feel like God was testing me.
And I wrote about that in a chapter in my book about trying to conceive, infertility, and then after we adopted, because I couldn't get pregnant. And I know that was part of God's plan, but I didn't know, I didn't understand it then, because we brought in a wonderful baby that was only just a few days old when we adopted him, when he was, just a little baby, and he's grown into a wonderful man and has a wonderful job and a family, and our two granddaughters came out of his relationship with his wife. So, God does have a plan, but at the time you're thinking, and then you have somebody in my dad's church, an old lady, say, why aren't you getting pregnant? And then with the affairs, I had somebody question me and call me and say, I thought you two had a good marriage. Yeah, shoot the wounded. Shoot the one that's wounded, right? Call
right.
her up and, that brings back anger right now in me. Which is a good, it's an emotion that you need to, talk about, and we all go through it.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay.
Hopefully
you tell me. go.
Okay. I want to get Pamela involved as well. Pamela, what do you think about all this?
Well, you know, I'm trying to start on what the main question is tonight, and that's what you have learned about waiting.
Right.
And I've learned that waiting is an absolute element or variable that is very prominent in what we've gone through, okay? It's a theme to me that runs throughout our lifelong journey towards healing and the pain we've dealt with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things, yes, and I agree with you, Joy, that one of the things that I was waiting for as a child, I was constantly waiting for someone in my family to come forward to save me from this monster that was abusing me, right? Yeah. I was pimped out by my mother for 14 years to her second husband. I was his sex slave.
Mm.
And so every day I would think, tomorrow's the day, you know, tomorrow's the day that somebody's going to notice what's going on. But, of course, in my 50s, when my repressed memories started coming back and I was waiting, I began waiting to know who was complicit in my sexual abuse. And I found out then that my mother knew. I never knew she knew. And I never wanted to bring it up. And that leads me back to the waiting. You know, I didn't go to the police when I turned 18. First of all, I didn't know it was a crime.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing, that waiting, I think God kept me safe from these people, because if I'd have brought it out to the police at that time, I believe they would have killed me, because they would have not have let themselves. They were a bunch of narcissists, and they would never have let themselves pay the price for what they did to me. They would kill me first. I know.
Who would have killed you?
The people who were complicit in my sexual slavery.
Wow.
Yeah, they would have, if I'd have gone to the police.
They would have shut you up, yeah.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, ma'am. I believe that God kept me from even knowing it was a crime. You understand
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying? When I was 18, I didn't know it was a crime.
Well, none of us did.
Right. So those are some things I learned about waiting. And I know that God is absolutely in the waiting. You know, he helps us to be long-suffering so that when we wait on him, that, you know, we don't get harmed more. You understand? We trust in him.
And I believe that God had me shut down for that long to have somewhat of a normal upbringing, not only in my own home, but with our three sons and their friends. You know, skateboarders, we had a pool, all the friends came over. I don't know if I had told them if anybody would have even wanted to come over. So, you know, we had a pretty normal home with our kids being here and growing up. And like you, Pamela, you know, I didn't. The suppressed memories were really suppressed until I was in my 40s, and then I, you know, faced the perpetrator and confronted him and wrote my book in a week after 38 years of secrets, and it just all tumbled out. And that was in God's appropriate time.
So I'm really glad that Joy's bringing waiting. You know, perspective out, because that's actually very profound that she's asking this question. It's a deep question.
Yes.
Right. I always
Cherie, you have more to say about it?
Yeah, I've always had a hard time with the waiting. Always. And there were times, you know, I wanted to, when I was being bullied in school, and that, I mean, it's ranks right up there with domestic violence. But while I wanted to transfer schools a lot sooner than I did, and I couldn't understand why, you know, every time we planned to move, you know, my mom would say, there was one time we planned to move to another county, and my mom told us that when I was in the eighth grade, and I remember being so excited, because I was finally going to get out of that rat hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then it fell through, and then we had a couple of more opportunities, and they fell through. So, and after a while, I got angry at God. I mean, I got angry. I shook my fist at him. I cussed him. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know I shouldn't have done that, but I was so tired of waiting. And eventually, when I was 18, I met a guy that was from another town, and we got into a relationship and took matters in my own hands.
Mm-hmm.
I got pregnant deliberately, so because I knew he would marry me, and I knew I would be able to go to this town and go to a new school. And that was the only way I was able to escape. And
well,
I mean,
can understand that as far as getting pregnant. I've never said this on the air before, but we adopted,
mm-hmm.
and then I got pregnant 5 months later with our second child.
Right.
Quite, you know, we were trying so desperately, and now I have two little babies. And then 7 years later, I wanted more children, and my husband did not. He figured,
right,
and that wasn't his choice, but he made it. And so I had the IUD taken out, and I wanted another baby. Yeah, I had two, but I birthed one. I wanted to birth at least another one. And so I had the IUD taken out, and I didn't tell him, like you just said. You know, it kind of triggered
mm-hmm.
this with me telling you this. And I got pregnant. And I was tickled to death because now I was going to have another baby. And, you know, it just 7 years later after our second child came into our lives, another one came in. So, yeah, I can understand that totally. And the anger part, I think I don't think you need to apologize, because anger is a strong emotion that we need to talk about, and we need to address, and we need to recognize that this is part of our healing journey to get
right.
angry. You know?
Right.
We might be angry at our co-perpetrator that didn't protect us. You know, I didn't tell my mother until she was in her 80s, 83, and I wanted to, and I desperately tried. And the waiting part mm-hmm. was excruciating for me. But there's a time and a place for everything. And I believe the anger is supposed to be talked about. I think that goes with it.
Right. And I was so angry. And you know, I was angry that I felt like because God didn't act, and this is how I felt then, I felt like because God didn't act, he forced me to have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of years, I blamed him. And I was like,
yeah.
You know, I would have a voice in my head said, well, you shouldn't have got pregnant on purpose. That was wrong. I was like, well, you forced me.
Yeah.
You know, all I wanted was to get out of a bad environment, and I guess you didn't see fit. Well, I saw fit, and I took it into my own hands.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like I'm still paying for that now. Sometimes I think he's making me atone.
How do you get along with that? Was it a little boy that you had? Your first son?
Well,
your child?
He's had a hard life. Yeah, he's had a hard life. You know, his father wasn't always there for him.
I'm so sorry.
And so he's had a bad, you know, not a bad life. But he's had a hard life, and
mm-hmm.
I feel like if I would have just maybe not married him, but gone ahead and carried the baby, that
mm-hmm.
maybe I could have prevented, you know, some of the things that he had to go through. Well,
I've got something to say right now. You guys don't mind me.
No, go ahead.
Breaking in here. First of all, I think, you know, I understand the anger and I understand the questioning of your choices. But what I'd like to communicate to you is, you know, you were a broken person and made a decision. You know, God
right.
will make good of the, God will make good of all things for those who trust in Him.
Right.
My recommendation is don't have any regrets. You've got your son. You made those decisions. Maybe you made a mistake. Maybe you didn't. Maybe it was God's plan all along. You don't know. I mean, you know, you got pregnant. You know, God
right.
allowed you to carry that baby. Maybe
mm-hmm.
that was part of His plan. Was it perfect? No, but God will make good of all situations for those who trust in Him. So don't beat yourself up.
Right.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Right.
You made those choices. You can't go back and undo it. Second-guessing yourself and shoulda, coulda, woulda isn't
mm-hmm.
going to do anything
right.
but manifest guilt and make you feel bad about that. It's done. He's here. You got pregnant. You know, that's what you had to get through. You know, accept it. Were you perfect in it? Maybe not. But accept it, forgive
right.
yourself, and move on. Please.
Right.
That's my recommendation.
I wouldn't take anything from my son. He is an awesome guy
uh-huh.
now. He's 30 years old. And I wouldn't
uh-huh.
I wouldn't trade him for anything. I mean, he's a miracle in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
I just you know, my heart breaks for him that he's had to go through so much. Now he's finally starting to get some stability in his life, and I couldn't be happier for him. Are you
right.
there?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, absolutely. I understand that.
And
you know, one thing,
and I'm
just like,
I just think, gosh, it's about time that poor kid got a break.
And you never know, he may. And, you know, it may be God's plan for him to go through what he's going through and become, maybe that contributes to his quality. You know, none of us, first of all, I'm so sorry, I'm going to finish this thought and then I'll turn it over to you. First of all, we were broken children. Somebody made the choice to break us. They put us in adult
right.
situations. They abused us. They bullied us.
Mm-hmm.
They did things. They exploited us. They raped us. Those are things that we shouldn't have had to go through. Somebody
right.
else put us through that. They made those decisions for us. You know, and we, you know, we're broken from it. But at the same time, had I not, and I'm not thankful that I went through what I went through, but it's part of who I am. My
mm.
abuse
right.
is part of who I am. I would not be on this call. I would not know
mm-hmm.
who any of you guys are. I would not have the opportunity to work with people who do reach out to me. You know, I was at my hangout, this guy, you know, he started, you know, for the last 2 or 3 weeks, he poured his heart out to me, you know, and I've been helping him through. He was sexually abused by his grandmother, you know, at a very young age. And this fella that's got the guilt and the self-loathing, and he's come a long way. You know, he's just somebody I palled around with that
mm-hmm.
had too much alcohol one night and exposed too much and found out, you know, about my past and, you know, what I do, my advocacy. I wouldn't have that opportunity had I not gone through that. Who knows what
right.
kind of person I would be. So, you know, I have to love me. I have to accept me. I have to accept my mistakes and forgive myself and move on. And that's all.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to
and I,
pop in here with Cherie, too. We all go through guilt, totally, especially when we've been hurt by others. And that leads to condemnation, and it produces anger. And inside anger is the worst form of abuse that, you know, that we don't deal with. And it brings
right.
thoughts of inadequacy, and it robs us of our ability to care for ourselves. So you did nothing wrong, Cherie. you were helpless. You were bullied. You were trying to get out of a situation. Were you trying to get pregnant? No, but you did. So, you know, don't blame yourself for that. But I also wanted to know is maybe this might someday, I don't know if you've had it yet, but someday maybe you'll have an opportunity to talk to your son about some of these feelings maybe that you had. Maybe you don't feel that it's time yet, and maybe it isn't. But those are kind of really difficult situations, and it's a difficult subject to bring up when you really don't want to. But I've had opportunity to talk to our oldest son, who we brought in through the birth of another mother, and I made the mistake of chosen child. We used to say you're our chosen child, and I had a baby book that, you know, was for an adopted child, and I wrote all kinds of things in there and memories, and each child had a baby book, and I'd write in it. But I wanted his to be special because it was our chosen child. But he resented that. He said when he got older in conversations every once in a while, I'd hear him say either to me or hear him say somebody else, I just wish I was one of the Hansen kids. I just wish that I wasn't chosen. I mean, yeah, I know they chose me, but, you know, and he's seeing it in an entirely different way than I saw it. I thought, wow, we chose to have him in our home, and we chose to take another mother's baby in. But I had to apologize, and this just happened about maybe 2 or 3 years ago. On Father's Day, he took my husband out with me for Father's Day a meal, and I said, honey, there's something I have not talked to you about, and I really need to. I need to tell you that I'm so sorry that you felt singled out as being chosen. And I didn't mean it that way, but I was so tickled to death that we had a baby coming to us when I tried and tried in infertility and I couldn't get pregnant and, you know, all sorts of things that we tried to do to get pregnant. And it didn't happen until we adopted you. But I'm so sorry you felt singled out, and I want to apologize. But I said where that came from was years ago when my dad had a church in Texas, in Longview, Texas, near Shreveport, Louisiana. One of my parents' friends adopted and then had, I think they adopted two children, and then they had two of their own natural born. And I heard her say that, you know, you're our chosen child. And I thought, wow, that's cool, you know. And then when we were adopting Todd, that just came into my, you know, consciousness and my actions. But just talking to Todd and, you know, being able to get it out, it just took that condemnation and guilt away from me. So that might be something that you would want to do down the road, and maybe it would make you feel better.
Oh, those guys, hold on, because they dropped off for some reason, but they're all back on.
Oh.
I don't know what happened, but I know I saw where you both dropped, and then you came back on. So I've got Pamela and Cherie. Everybody's here, right? Pamela, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yes.
And Cherie?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's, I'm not sure, did you hear most of what Barbara Joy was talking about, that I guess, without repeating everything, that it may be a good idea to talk to him, and she gave a little synopsis of her situation with Todd. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay. Well, let's make sure that I want to make sure that I keep Pamela involved as well. So, Pamela, what do you think about what Barbara Joy and what Cherie has shared? What are your thoughts?
Okay. Well, to the question of being angry with God, I mean, I get that so much from survivors. Mm. Okay. And of course, I had the question too. And I did ask God point blank, why didn't you intervene? You know, you're you're God Almighty, creator of earth, creator of us. You know, I mean, you have so much power. Why did you sit back and do nothing? Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I didn't get the answer until I surrendered to him. I literally went crazy and insane behind my abuse, okay, when I was 30 years old, okay? And I have like a Nebuchadnezzar story of salvation. I don't know if anybody knows the story of Nebuchadnezzar. He was prideful. He got prideful. He was a king. He was on the throne. Basically, that represents to me he was on the throne of his own life, right?
Right.
So he, yeah. So God told him, you're going to wander in the wilderness and you're going to, you know, have it bad until you look up and see me, right? Look up and give me respect for who I am. So when I was in the depths of despair and literally dying and insane, I was ready to pray with my husband. I was never ready to hear him or pray with him or anything because of what I was feeling in my pride, okay? So one night we prayed in the name of Jesus, and I was instantaneously healed from my insanity. And
wow.
I knew it was, yes, ma'am, when he prayed the name of Jesus, I felt this peace come over me that I'd never felt my entire life. I still didn't know it was Jesus. I woke up the next morning, and the world seemed new, okay? And so I got in the shower, and it didn't feel like the dirt from the outside was coming off. It felt like the dirt from the inside was coming off. And I heard myself, say, Jesus, if you're real, I want to know you. Instantaneously, I was delivered of the depression, and I became a disciple of Christ. Well, in my journey of following the Lord and reading his word, I found out that we are in a cosmic battle, a spiritual battle. And because of the spiritual battle, the adults that were over me and in my life were under, they were not under the, what do you call, the power of the, you know, they weren't under control of
the Lord.
The
anointing of the Holy Spirit, yeah.
Well, they weren't saved, I'll just put it that way. They didn't know the Lord. So they actually served the devil, and they served what the devil wanted to do to take me out, okay? But look at me now. You know, I'm healed completely. My mental health is maximum. I mean, only God, okay? And
Amen.
There's a scripture where, there's a scripture where Joseph was in jail, and Genesis 50:20, he said, you meant this for evil, meaning man, you know, man in general, the flesh, whatever, the devil. But God meant it for the healing of many and the salvation of many. So my tale today is actually his story and my story, and my story and his story. The two are connected. And that's why, you know, God is not, he did not create you for you to become angry at him. He created you because he loved you, but Adam and Eve sinned, okay? So now sin, now we live in a fallen world with sin, and we can't do anything about it, but we can turn to Jesus, and he's the only one that can comfort us, you know? Yeah,
right.
So it's about eternity in the end.
Absolutely. Now, I do need to mention this. You know, I am a woman of faith, and hearing you guys speak, I can tell that you guys are women of faith as well. NASCA is a 501c3. We do support folks who are of faith, aren't of faith, you know, maybe of a different religion. We do support everybody. So I want, if there's anyone who is streaming in, to know that, you know, that these are personal attributes of our own. I mentioned it as well. Like I said, I'm a woman of faith. But for anyone who may be listening, I need to make sure everybody understands NASCA supports everybody, the religious, the non-religious.
and to just make sure that, that everybody knows that you're welcome no matter what. I hear that a lot, you know, that I got angry at God. I've been angry at God before and asked why. You know, it's hard when somebody's beating you or putting you down or abusing you, you know, to ask those questions, you know, why are you allowing me to go through this? My personal faith, and I can only speak for myself, is, you know, a lot of times, you know, I tended to look to God when I should have been looking at the person committing the sin. You know, God gives us free will. You know, in my opinion, God gives us free will. And again, I'm a firm believer that, you know, everything, you know, God will make good of all for those who believe in Him. That's my personal faith. But to get angry at God and get angry at our perpetrators and to get angry at, you know, the people who sat by and did nothing, anger is normal. Anger is an mm-hmm. emotion that we have to deal with. I think the fear comes is when we stay there and we remain there and we, you know, bask in it. It can become unhealthy for our insides. You know, I'm not. I've talked about this a couple times on the show. I have a different perspective. A lot of times, and if it's your belief, that's fine. If it's somebody who's listening to belief, that's fine. It's not that I withhold forgiveness, but I don't have to forgive someone who beat me and put me down that never apologized for me. I can be at peace with it. I'm a firm believer that, you know, they have to answer for that. What they did to me was wrong. It was their sin, not me. I don't, you know, they're going to have to answer for it. I have to answer for my own behavior. So I get a little irritated sometimes when people tell me, you have to forgive them. You have to forgive your grandmother or you can't heal. Well, yes, I can. You know, yeah. God expects me to not withhold forgiveness, but I'm at peace with it. And I've come to the understanding she's got to answer for why she did what she did to me. But that's my personal belief. So I want to stop right there, and I want to turn back to Barbara Joy and give her an opportunity to make some comments on what Cherie and Pamela have shared. Barbara Joy, if you don't mind, you know, because they have shared some pretty intimate personal details, and I want to give you an opportunity to respond, please. Barbara Joy?
Yeah, I really appreciate them calling in, and I know Cherie has a strong faith in God as well, and we're all women of faith, and we wouldn't be here without it. For myself, I really grew as a result of, you know, having a spiritual awakening, and that took a long, long time for me. Cherie, my heart goes out to you for what you've gone through, for the bullying that you've gone through, and you're wanting to be heard and you're needing to be heard and you're sharing your story all over the place, and I'm so proud of you for being
Thank
able
you
to do
so
that.
Much.
It takes so much courage, and it takes, you know, a lot of courage for all of us to get on the show and talk about some of these very, very hard things that we've gone through. And Pamela, I know you wanted to be saved, and I'm delighted with your story and how, you know, you had a complete turnaround and a restoration of mind, body, soul, and much as what I had. But that takes time, and I wouldn't take anything back. I wouldn't want to go through anything that I've gone through again because it was very painful. It was very heartrending. But like Tammy said, I wouldn't be on the show. I wouldn't have been able to face the perpetrator and forgive him. I wouldn't have been able to write my book and grieve my losses had I not gone through these things, including, you know, facing the clergy that violated me. And I don't tell people they have to forgive, and I agree with you, Tammy. It's your own journey. It's your own time frame. Some people can never forgive, and they shouldn't, perhaps. But for me, I never dreamed that I'd even see this man again in his 80s that had violated me when he was 27 and I was 11. But had I not gone in that room and faced him and chose to forgive him, and he fell down the stairs and died 7 weeks later, I would not have been able to write that heartrending chapter in my book either. So for me, that was the right choice. Did he get right? I don't know. That's between him and God. Did I let the ember of hatred go in my heart? I didn't think I had any anger towards him, but I must have. But, you know, when I walked in that room, I couldn't even speak. I was so shy and shut down and introverted. The clergy that led me through it, there were several, and a psychologist and a sex offender, they turned the tape recorder up. I didn't realize I had to look at him, and I had to speak to him. And my father told me before I went down to Florida to face him, he said, "You're going to be looking at the devil himself." I said, "No, Dad, he's not the devil." But, you know, he was tempted by something that he could have chosen not to do to us kids at the campgrounds. And I don't remember where it is, but about the locusts that have stolen the things in our lives. A friend of mine said the locusts are like big bugs that eat all the crops, and they eat them so fast that there's nothing left. And I'd never heard that before, but God has replaced all that the locusts have stolen. I believe he's doing that each day with us. He's doing it now. He's already done a lot of it. And, you know, I'm so delighted to be a co-host on the show and be able to shed some light. I go back to the book of Job, and he was all alone. He was forsaken. His wife said, "Curse God and die." And his friends, until they opened their mouth, sat with him and listened to him, or just sat and suffered with him. But until they opened up their mouth and started saying something to him, it just kind of wiped the slate clean. And, you know, in times of grief, we don't need somebody to talk to us. We need somebody to listen to us or just sit with us. And because grief is draining. It's very exhausting. A lot of times we need to cocoon for our transportation, which I think we all have done. It's very heavy. It can wear us down. And we need to be gentle with ourselves in order to heal. So the cocoon, I'm out of my cocoon. I'm flying like a butterfly now. And I've surrendered in the process. And I'm trusting that new will continue to come in each of us.
Thank you for sharing that. Well, let me ask you guys. It is 8:53. Let's see how much we have. About 36 minutes left. About 36 minutes to kind of finish close the show. So we've got about 30 minutes. I wanted to see if the group wanted to continue with this conversation, make some more comments, or Barbara Joy, if you have another topic you want to bring up? Where do you want to go with the show?
I don't know. Does somebody else have something that they might want to add or say that they haven't yet?
I do.
Who's that?
Okay.
Pamela?
Pamela, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, back to waiting to continue the theme.
Okay.
This is very interesting. When in my 50s, when my repressed memories started coming back up, the reason they did is because my sister, who witnessed my sexual abuse by my stepdad, was very, very emotionally disturbed. Okay. One of the reasons she was emotionally disturbed is because he put her in a room, and she was isolated and neglected, and so she does not have any social. She cannot socialize with anybody. She's more like, and she has a good heart, but she just has narcissistic personality disorder to the nth degree. Okay. Well, she ended up going into the insane ward. I use the word insane because people do understand that term. You know, we try to be politically correct. But she went insane, and she was admitted to the depression ward, and she came out a week later, and she had a $14,000 bill, okay? Well, she attributed this to her abuse, and she started calling our abuser, who is still alive, by the way, lives in Bossier City, and she told him that I want the money, sent him the bill, said I want you to pay for my bill. And she started harassing him. Well, while she was harassing him, that side of the family got worried, okay? Now, mind you, these are step folks. These aren't, you know, immediate family. You know, and they just wrote us off. They didn't want anything else to do with us, okay? So when she started sending this letter, they got scared. They didn't know what to do. And they tried to go to the police to get what's called a protective order. They sent my abuser to the police to get a protective order. Well, a protective order is very in-depth, and it's hard to get because it gets the person that you get the protection order. It takes their it goes to their character. It goes to their character, but also their reputation, right? Here mm-hmm. I am trying to become a social worker. I have a master's in social work now. And, I couldn't have this on my record, so I had to get an attorney and all that because he called us both in for the protection order, even though I wasn't even part of calling him like she was. But he was trying to abuse me again. And criminal prescription had run on him. I couldn't touch him. It's 30 years in Louisiana. Criminal statute of limitations on child abuse. So he thought he was okay, and while he was getting the protective order, which is hard to fill out, he called the detective over to help him fill it out. So the detective comes over, and he says, this is very hard to fill out, but I need to get it because I sexually abused her as a child, and I'm scared of her. She said, stand up, sir, you're under arrest. So they didn't know how long the abuse had happened, so he opened the case, right?
Wow.
So when he got, they put him under, they Mirandized him, but then they also taped him on DVD about his crime, right? So he told them about sexually abusing me, and, I, at that point, because of all that my sister was doing, I was in the hospital at the time because this opened up my repressed memories, right? So I'm back in the hospital because of it all. So anyway, to make a long story short, he ended up opening a civil case for me, 5 years for this civil case because they fought it tooth and nail. It went to the Louisiana Appellate Court twice and the Louisiana Supreme Court twice, and I'm waiting. You know, for this to happen. Had I known it was going to take 5 years, I would not have made it through. But God, and 2 weeks before the trial, they came and settled with me and settled out the civil suit. So talk about waiting.
Yeah, that is pretty incredible. Well,
yeah.
I think that's pretty amazing that happened for you, that you got justice, right?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. The district judge apologized to me from the bench. Do you know how validating and how, and told me he didn't think I was crazy and that I wasn't lying, and you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, It was awesome. It was awesome.
I think a lot of us feel that we are crazy, or we've been told that we're crazy. I have a couple of friends whose husbands put them in mental institutions because they thought they were crazy. But what I say when I speak is, crazy happened to us, but that doesn't make us crazy. There's a big difference.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, so after, when that court case ended, the day it ended, I had complete closure and I had my story. I didn't even know I had a story. A year later, my book was published. It's called Pimp from 4 to 18, A Survivor's Fast Track to Mental Wholeness. And I also have a workbook, Grief Stages Plus Narrative Therapy. And what I found out as I was getting my master's in social work is that before we can really heal completely and find that complete closure, we have to grieve the loss of our sexual innocence.
That's right.
So, yeah. And so I came up with a therapy called Grief Stages Plus Narrative Therapy, and in my book I take people through denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, and then I added three more stages: thriving, striving, and continued journey to eternity. So see what God did and how he turned it around for me, and he can do. And what I want to say here is most profound. What he did for me, he shows no favoritism. What he did for me, he could do for anybody that wants it, just asking.
Right. Yeah, I didn't understand the grief journey either until I started teaching Beauty Out of Ashes, and we go through similar chapters in my course on grieving, because you're not taught. I mean, who teaches that? You know, who preaches about that in church? And, you know, even with, you've probably had women that you know, all of you maybe, that have had abortions as a result of being traumatized with sexual abuse. And, you know, we don't come into church and, oh, guess what I just did, Pastor? I had an abortion. No, nobody does. And they shut down from that for years and decades, and they feel guilty. I've got a friend of mine that went through several, and she was part of the sex abuse case that I went through. And we have a bond that can't be broken because of what we've gone through. And my mother took her in when she got pregnant out of wedlock, because her parents, who were a pastor and his wife, refused to take her in, and her mother took in foster kids. So these are things that we've gone through that we have shared so deeply, and you can't understand unless you've gone through it, unless you've walked in my shoes, and can help another person out once you heal. But the grieving process, I totally agree with you, Pamela. You know, we need to understand what grief is and how it's like a death experience, dark night of the soul, like C.S. Lewis says. And the crimes against us need to be grieved, and grieved deeply.
I mean.
I agree.
That's what I think. Once we go through that grieving process, I think then we're really, really ready to accept and to get closure. And closure for me, because a lot of people think, oh, it'll never be closed because I'll never forget it. Closure isn't forgetting, okay?
No, it isn't.
I mean, I wouldn't be talking on the show right now if I forgot it, right? So,
right.
What closure was for me? Closure was, I don't have that tape running around in my head day after day after day about the abuse, okay? I don't have dreams anymore about being abused, daytime or in the nighttime. I don't even think of those people anymore. They're just not on my radar. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, they're just, you know, God has totally put up the wall against me even, you know, thinking about them. I mean, they're just non-existent to me. You know, and, you know, there's just several things that closure has brought. It's brought a peace, you know, that's beyond understanding about the whole situation. It's just, you know.
That's right.
Well, Cherie, yeah. What are your thoughts? Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Cherie, what are your thoughts? I just want to get everybody involved.
Well, I've gotten closure too, and you know, for a long time, closure was not what I thought. But I think I've gotten closure in that, you know, I don't think of them like I used to. But it's like when I do think of my former bullies, I just shake my head, and a lot of times I kind of laugh at them. Other times I'm like, I feel sorry for them. I don't hate them.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do think of them, and, you know, I write, I have an anti-bullying blog, and I write books based on, with a theme of bullying in them. So, you know, I have to think about the bullying, but it doesn't hurt to think about it.
Amen.
A lot of times I feel like I've overcome, I've won over them.
Yeah.
But, you know, even there are times, even in the last few years, I've gotten some pretty
right.
nasty messages from them. And all I could do was just, you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
And just delete
Bye.
And block. But a lot of them don't have lives.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, one thing I'd like to make a comment on, you know, I think it's wonderful that Pamela got the closure and how she got it. She won.
She did.
Kind of told on himself. I think that's a great story. That's an amazing story. And to talk about closure, sometimes we don't get the closure from the people. We don't, you know, we don't get the justice, you know, in the
right.
court system
right.
that we want. Or we don't get the apology from the grandmother who's dead and I'll never get it from her. Sometimes we just don't
right.
get that, but we can give it to ourselves. You
mm-hmm.
know what?
Right.
And if I understood, Cherie, I don't want to speak for you, but that's kind of what come to my mind when you were saying that. You know, I've given myself closure. If I understood you correctly, you've given yourself closure. Those people are still trying to bully. They're still
right.
trying to do this, or we'll never get that. So for you guys or anyone who is listening, who's streaming in on the show, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, if we don't get the closure through the justice system, and we may never, we can give ourselves
right.
that closure. We can say,
Amen.
You know what, they don't define me, they can't control me, I'm
That's
not,
right.
you know, and emotions, they're natural. What people go through and what I've gone through is traumatic. You know, I'm allowed to have emotions about it. I was allowed to be angry
yeah.
about it. I'm allowed to be sad. I'm allowed to curl up in a fetal position when I need to, but I can't stay
right.
there. I've got to be able to give myself, you know, the permission to move on, close it out and heal. You know, do we think back on it? Yeah. Like, I think it was Pamela. I think it was Pamela that said, you know, of course I haven't forgot about her. I wouldn't be on the show.
right.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just my thoughts. What do y'all think?
Yeah,
I totally agree.
I agree with you, Tammy. If we didn't have the memories, I mean, they have to come up in order for us to heal. So,
Amen. Right.
And, yeah, and we need to work through those memories. We'll never forget them, and we're not supposed to. But there, years ago when I wasn't healed and I didn't have a spiritual and an emotional healing, there wasn't a day that went by I didn't think about what happened to me. And I cried and, you know, because I was so downtrodden and so hurt and so betrayed. And I didn't know how to work through it, including forgiveness with my husband. And we're still together. God healed it. He healed our marriage. And I'm a living testament as well that God can do anything except fail. He is a miracle-working God. Had I divorced, and it would have, you know, probably gone into a worse relationship or another abusive marriage. But instead, I healed. I started speaking about it. I started traveling and going into prisons and prison conferences and secular and Christian and schools and speaking in the Philippines, in 23 churches and in the jungle and mountains and villages, and as a humanitarian aid worker, I was invited to go in the mountains and parks and villages and the government hospital and give a PowerPoint presentation on my own addiction, which was codependency, and speak to the orphans in the Father's House orphanage and buy them food and clothing and pillows and dressers and shoes and games, and presented a domestic violence skit, and I fell in love with all the 13 kids that were from trafficked homes and abusive alcoholic homes. And God has given me such deep compassion for those Jesus calls the least of these. And I'm just, you know, I am moved with compassion towards people that are the underdog and people that are shut down and abused. And there's a reason they're like that, you know. There's a reason that we were the way we were. And working through our fears and, you know, things that we've gone through are the only way to heal and the only way to have closure.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. This is Pamela. One of the two things that I'm out telling you about closure for myself is I decide when I want to feel anything about my abuse now. You know, before it would come extrinsically upon me, right? But now I've got it. Since now that I've got closure, it comes from within me. Okay, instead of without me and coming upon me and controlling me, I now control it. Okay, so I feel anything about my abuse, when my past abuse, when I choose to feel about it and to what degree I want to feel about it. Like being on the show tonight, you think I'm not feeling emotions? I feel like screaming right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good scream. It's not a bad scream, you know? And also I'm totally good in my own skin now. No more trying to self-destruct and run away and escape. I can deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I know where I am on my journey. I'm an advocate. I'm no longer a victim. I'm no longer a survivor. I'm an actual advocate now. You know what I'm saying? I advocate for others who don't have a voice yet, who aren't able to speak about it yet. And because of where I am, where God has me right now, you know, if it wasn't for us right now, we wouldn't be able to help others have their voice or find their voice to healing. Because when you can't voice it, you can't heal.
That's right.
That's right, yeah.
Right. I agree. You know, I mentioned my friend. I don't want to mention his name, but this is a guy who's local. You know, he's actually a little cutie that's kind of hitting on me. Yeah, I'm single. And we got talking, and of course, you know, when I told him what I did, you know, because it's an icebreaker, and I'm proud of it. You know, I'm NASCA. I'll bring up NASCA. Well, the first question is usually, what is NASCA? Well, it's the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, and then I've learned to cut it off. You know, and then some people will instantly tell me their story. Some people will drop a couple of hints. Some people run for the hills, but this guy. You know, we got to chit-chatting, and, you know, he gave me a little bit of information and kind of picked up on it. And then he gave me a little bit more. And then, you know, we're sitting here at the sports bar up the street where my little local hangout, and we're talking. It was on a Saturday night. And, you know, and tears just ran down his face, you know. The first time he brought it up, I could tell he was getting a lot of anxiety. So he got up really quick. He went over to the side. He got himself together. He came back. Well, the second time that we really got into deep talking about it, and the lady who molested him, his grandmother, her birthday is my birthday, December the 19th.
Mm.
So, it, you know, it brought it up for him. And, you know, one of the things that sticks out is he hated himself. He didn't like to look in the mirror. You know,
mm-hmm.
he blamed himself. And I could just tell he was so guilt-stricken. And so we've had a couple of conversations, and I called him up the other day to see how he's doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I told him something. He's gone through therapy, but, you know, what he said something to me that really made my heart smile. He said, you know, Tammy, I've gone to a therapist, and he's told me a lot about this. He said, but I'm hearing this from another survivor. And was powerful to me. That was powerful.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And, you know, and I gave him some other tips, you know, about, you know, what people forget is, and this is what I reminded him, was, you know, the physical aspect of sex feels good. It doesn't matter if you're 3 or 30. You
right.
know, unless somebody's beating you or torturing you, if somebody, you know, grabs your penis or, you know, grabs your, you know, pets
mm-hmm.
your vagina, it's going to feel good. And that's
right.
where a lot of guilt comes in. You wanted it. You leaned into it. You asked for it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
You're absolutely
and,
right.
And they hold it against us, and we hold our own self in that guilt. And I told him, so baby, that's not your monkey. You know, and he said, Tammy, you know, just hearing, you know, understanding, hearing this, I've never heard it from a survivor before. I've heard it from a therapist.
Wow.
It really didn't do any good. And I smiled half the day over it. So
that's
what we do matters.
That is,
our advocacy matters.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It sure does.
Thank
yeah, that's what we are.
Story.
That's what we're for is to give back. Give back what we've received. If we don't
Amen.
Give back, then why hold? You know, why even heal?
Right.
Every time you stand up for yourself, you stand up for somebody else.
Exactly.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, we've
yeah.
got about 12 minutes left, so you know, I want us to make any comments. If like Barbara Joy said earlier, if anybody's got something that they want to share that they haven't had an opportunity, now's the time, because I'd like to save a few minutes for Barbara to give some closing thoughts. So Pamela or Cherie, do you have something that's on your heart that you'd like to share? Or Barbara Joy, if you want to talk about something that you've heard, I would say that's probably in the next 5 minutes, because I want to give you a few closing minutes as well. Anyone?
This is Pamela. I'd like to share about my new website. It's Women Survivors in Business, and what I'm doing is it's an advocate-to-advocate program to help each advocate become, you know, entrepreneurs. And then once we do that, we're going to reach out to victims and help them become entrepreneurs, okay? To help get their mind, you know, on, help them have something to be grounded with while they're healing. You understand what I'm saying? Because, you know, if you're alone and you're inactive and you're sitting there with all your, you know, evil thoughts, I mean, that's just not a place to be. So I want to have a place virtually that people can come together and be doing business together, you know, victims even, become empowered as entrepreneurs. So again, the website is womensurvivorsinbusiness.org. And I also have my book and my workbook on there, and for if you buy the workbook, you get the book free. Okay.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Cherie, what do you think? Absolutely, Pamela. Thank you very much. Cherie, what do you think?
First of all, I want to thank Pamela for sharing that information. I'll definitely check that website out. I want to share my own website.
Okay.
In fact, I have two. It's you can go to www. Oh, pardon me. I'm sorry.
Take your time.
www.cheriewhite.blog, and it'll take you to my blog about bullying, and I tackle bullying from all aspects. The mindsets of bullies, the tactics they use, because I really think that we need to know about their mindsets, about their tactics, why they use those tactics, why people bully, all of it. Because I believe that knowledge, with knowledge comes empowerment. I also have an author website where you can find my books on bullying. It's www.authorshereewhite.com, and it'll take you to my author website.
How do you spell Sheree? S-H-E-R.
C-H-E-R-I-E.
Okay, because I had it S-H. Okay, C-H-E-R-I-E. Okay. And it's SherryWhite.blog.
Yeah.
SherryWhite.blog. And then Sherry, and then author Sherry. Say them again.
It's authorshereewhite.com. It's, pardon me, I got that wrong about the blog. It's www.shereewhite.wordpress. Hold on a minute. Yeah, it's www.shereewhite.blog. I got it right the first time.
Okay.
You're and like me, Sheree. You can't remember worth unless it's written down.
I've got CRS bad.
Yeah, I think I do too. I can't even believe I'm an author. You?
it's surreal. It's very surreal.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I think this has been a dynamic show. Barbara Joy, I'm glad you brought the subject up that you did. I think it hit close to my heart. Hopefully it did, Pamela and Sheree as well. I'd like to point out that we know from the stats that a lot of people do stream in. We can't really tell how many people stream in until after the show. I mean, it could be 10, it could be 300. One time I saw 2,000 on this. You never know how many people we are reaching on this.
That's
for
wonderful.
For the folks who are streaming in, please understand you can call in at any time. The show's almost over, and you will be welcomed. I understand a lot of folks don't feel comfortable talking about it yet. A lot of people are just learning that the NASCA show is out there somewhere that they can listen and hear, you know, similar stories, you know, so they don't feel alone, because we want to be a support for our survivor community and our victim community, because some people are still, you know, at victim mode and still wounded and, you know, wondering what to do. You know, I've heard this time and again. I didn't know when I was going through it that anyone else had experienced that. I thought it was just me. I was singled out in this world. There's a ton of survivors out there, a ton. The statistics tell us that. But ladies, it's been a great show. It's not over. We've got a few minutes. But what I want to do now is I want to turn it back over to Barbara Joy so she can give us – we've got about 6 minutes. So, Barbara Joy, if you'll take if you want to talk about, you know, a recap of what we talked about or anything that's on your heart, you've got about 5 minutes.
I want to give my website too, and my book is called "Listen to the Cry of the Child: The Deafening Silence of Sexual Abuse." And when I was preparing a little bit for the show and talking about the subject on waiting. Usually when people ask me the name of my book, I say, "Listen to the Cry of the Child." But there's more on the cover of it, "The Deafening Silence of Sexual Abuse." So, you know, when you've been bullied and abused and beaten and all the things that we've talked about tonight, it's deafening, and you can't address it. And until you address it, you don't heal. So my website is www.listentothecry.org, and I think if you put any of our names on there and we have a website, it should come up. I know if you put Barbara Joy Hansen in on Google it, most of my stuff will come up, my Facebook account and things. But My book is available. We give back to the orphans that we and we're helping buy new jeepneys for the Philippines for the Barnard Christian Academy in the Philippines. So I, in the fundraising I did at Walmart in the spring and in the summer, I was able to send some money to NASCA, some money to the orphans at the Father's House orphanage, and to the school for the jeepneys, which are like broken down buses. So, you know, I've been blessed. When the money comes in, I pour it out. So if you haven't gotten my book yet, I know Cherie has and she's read it. You can get it from us quicker, and we can send it out to you. So you can contact me at my phone number at home at 508-473-1280 or Bobby Joy Hansen at juno.com. That's my email. My book is $20 plus shipping and handling. And we've sent them all over the world to people in Australia and Scotland and all over the world. And when I was in the Philippines, I carried about 100 of them and gave out so many books, we didn't come home with any. And then I gave out my support material too. So the seeds have been planted, and I'm blessed to have been able to have that experience. It was very eye-opening to be able to go to a third world country with no awareness about violence or violence prevention.
Thank you for sharing that. Let me check the time. We've got 3 minutes. So I think everybody has shared their information. You know, Cherie, and I'll say this really quickly because we're almost out of time. Bullying is important, you know, to a subject to bring up. So thank you for bringing that up, and thank you for all you're doing with that, because, you know, a lot of us, even as children, were bullied by cohorts and, you know, our classmates, but we're also bullied by some of our perpetrators as well. So I think that's amazing. So thank you for all your work you're doing on that. Pamela, I think it's absolutely amazing what you're doing. I know you're getting involved a lot with NASCA, if I'm not mistaken, and thank you for your help there. Bill said something about you might be looking to host. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm so excited.
Oh, yeah.
Congratulations. Okay. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do the scheduling, and we share the task of training on the panel. So I'm really, really, really excited about that. So thank you very much. We're wrapping it up.
When y'all are ready to train me, I'm ready to go.
Okay. Well, we'll get it going right away. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Just the learning the panel, pulling up the studio panel and whatnot. It's really easy. And we'll be there to support you as well. So I'll get with you offline about what nights work for you. So we'll go from there. I want to mention tomorrow night our special guest, I just got the 90-second mark, is Mia McKinney. She's out of Florida, and she's a survivor, and she's an author. So Carol Levine usually hosts Friday night. So if you guys have an opportunity, please call in and join her on that. So with that said, we've got just about a minute. But I do know that we have the 60-second mark. We do have the holidays coming up, so I think it's important for us to have these shows because the holidays are very lonely for some people. It brings up a lot of anxieties with the family, so we need the support in NASA, you know, all we can get.
Miss Tammy?
Yeah, we are out of time. I'm sorry, who was
it?
Pamela, oh, I'm so sorry.
Want to tell you, I'm going to be hosting the Christmas show.
Okay, cool beans. Well, I've got about 26 seconds left, so I've got to end the show. And I want to thank you all. And Pamela, I'm going to reach out to you, so thank you for all you're doing. So, with that said, God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here,
y'all.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Sure.
Thank you.
Sure.
Another tomorrow. that dawn was gone. You often got it after all that you've done.
All right, let's see. 71438-05. All right. 71218-0805. All right, that means I'm done. Yay. All right, those I got to hold on to. Let me print this. Shoes. All right, I can get the fuck out of here. Someone to write in a letter, it's borderline harassment,
yeah.
And it's got to stop. And if I have to address it, I will, but I don't want to.
Well, we get to work together tomorrow night.
And she won't stop me.
And they all know I'm not.
Right.
Oh, and if you want, I need to
just going to have to order some.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I'm going to have it for tomorrow night.
Yeah, but I mean, you can make one for you, but
Somebody else has them. Yeah, that's okay. It was just kind of odd because she said, we all have them. You all have them, right?
No.
And I said, no.
Jeremy, none of them do. She'll
give me
the chair people.
Okay, okay.
You know, like chairs and governors and
okay.
Stuff.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm out of here.
All right.
Bye. Good
I can bring me in two. They're 350, right? I think mine's 350. $350, I literally just got off work. Is it slow? Yeah, because it's so cold.
Yeah, it was colder last night, and it came out more than they did tonight.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Normal crowd wasn't here?
Yeah, but it was just quieter than usual.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Why did you come in?